Good morning. Welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey. And of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of the Memphis community, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. And our guest today is here, a re-invitation to come and be on the show in another one of his capacities on the campus of the University of Memphis. He is the director of the Marcus W. Orr Center for the Humanities here on the campus. His name is Aram Gadzouzian, and he is also in charge of the Hooks Institute National Book Award Lecture, which is coming up here at the University of Memphis on the 19th of March. The reception at 5:30 p.m., the lecture at 6 p.m., and it is in honor of the late Manning Marable's Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention, which was released just a little while ago. And it's going to be at the University Center Theater. Our guest, Aram Gadzouzian.
Hi, Malvin.
Hello. Good to see you back again.
It's nice to be back here. I was just here.
But like I said, though, this is in one of your other capacities.
It's true.
So tell us, first of all, tell us something about the Hooks Institute National Book Award Lecture Series.
Sure. Well, you know, the Benjamin L. Hooks Institute for Social Change is our institute here on campus that is a public policy institute. And part of their goal is to merge the life of academia with some of the broader social concerns that the city of Memphis and that the broader nation faces, especially in terms of politics and in terms of race. The Hooks Institute used to have a book award under its previous director that was kind of a shambles, actually. The director has since left the university and left Memphis. And the award fell apart. And it was just sort of, there was no real criteria for it. So when Daphne McFerrin became the director of the Hooks Institute, She had transformed the institute, for one thing, and turned it into one of the real pillars on the university scene in terms of what it does to benefit the community, and in terms of the people that they bring to speak and the conferences that they hold. And Daphne
has elevated the prestige tremendously.
Yeah, she's been a remarkable presence here on the campus. One of the many things that the Hooks Institute has since done is to revive this book award. So this 2000 the upcoming award will be the second year of the revived Book Award, where we put together a committee of professors and scholars of history and other disciplines as well, not just from here on campus, but also from other Memphis institutions, from Rhodes College and from Lemoyne Owen College.
Right.
And we sift through a huge number of nominations every year, get it down to five finalists, and then choose a book as our National Book Award winner. So the 2011 winner, so of course, or 2012 winner, excuse me, being honored in 2013, is Manning Marable's book, Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention.
Right, okay. And Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention, we were talking about it earlier. What a topic, man, Malcolm X.
I mean, Malcolm X is one of the figures in African-American history, right? But he's also one of sort of the central figures, I think, in understanding modern American history. Many, many, many people have been so touched and influenced by the autobiography of Malcolm X, right? This has been a book about that has given a lot of people sort of an intellectual awakening, both black and white, in terms of thinking about the black
experience. And Manning Marable wrote that, right?
Well, the autobiography was a book that was published immediately after Malcolm X's death. What Manning Marable is doing in this book, in his biography, which is really the first full-scale, total political biography of Malcolm X, what he's doing in this book is in a lot of ways poking a lot of holes in the autobiography. He's trying to get at sort of the way that it has mythologized Malcolm X to a certain extent. And part of that is the very interesting collaboration on the autobiography between Malcolm X and Alex Haley, who was his co-writer.
Right.
Of course, Alex Haley is famous for also writing Roots, right?
Yeah.
And Alex Haley is coming to that project thinking about selling books, thinking about trying to craft a story that's going to appeal to a large number of people. And he also brings his political perspective to it, which is probably more liberal and more open than perhaps Malcolm X's, who's obviously advocating more of a militant or a nationalistic perspective.
At first.
So the book becomes, so the autobiography sort of becomes a mix of their two perspectives, of Alex Haley's and Malcolm X's. And throughout the biography that Marable writes, he is pointing out some of the issues with the autobiography. And showing the ways that sometimes Malcolm X obscured the truth for his own purposes, and that's going to be true of anyone, right? If you're telling the story of your life, if I'm telling the story of my life, I'm going to tell it in a particular way that suits me, right? Malcolm X is no different from anyone else in that regard. So that's one of the many ways in which this biography by Marable is really contributing to a more sophisticated understanding of Malcolm X.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, like you said, it is a biography. It's Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. It doesn't mm-hmm. say biography mm-hmm. in the title, but mm-hmm. He has done this with the blessings of the family as well, right?
To a certain extent, yeah. He has it's not what you'd call an authorized biography. It's not in that sense, but yeah. he had pursued access with a whole host of people, both within his family and within the Nation of Islam and in the broader experience. One of Marable's tales from the research trail is that he was trying to pin down an interview with Louis Farrakhan for a long time. And, of course, Farrakhan was both a close associate of Malcolm X's and then later something of a rival. And it was, he found it impossible to get access to him. He was putting off the interview. But when they spoke for 9 hours. And it turned into this very in-depth conversation about Malcolm X that was very beneficial to his research.
Wow.
So that's just one of the many ways in which Marable, this book is so deeply researched. In some ways, it's a process of about 20 years of work. And that's when you really start to conceive of this biography. But really, even 10 years of a fairly intense work, which is a long time to be working on a biography. And just the level of sources he's mined through the FBI files on Malcolm X. Now, of course, he was under constant surveillance by the FBI as soon as he was a notorious figure. And now, while that's, of course, objectionable in a lot of ways, it's a historian's dream to have this close accounting of Malcolm X's life by close observers.
To be a blessing after J. Edgar Hoover passed, and now all those files have been released and everybody gets to see what's going on.
It's true. For any civil rights historian, on the one hand, you understand that the sources, of course, are biased, and you also understand some of the tragic history behind why the FBI is doing some of the surveillance. But you also, as a historian, love it for its close, detailed record of what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I love this, the first part of the book. He was a master of reinvention who had as many names as he did identities. Malcolm Little, Homeboy, Jack Carlton, Detroit Red, Big Red, Satan, Malachi Shabazz, Malik Shabazz, El Shabazz, and most famously Malcolm X, a country bumpkin who became a zoot-suited entertainer, who became a petty criminal, who became a self-taught intellectual, who became a white-hating black nationalist, who became a follower of Orthodox Islam, who became an international figure championing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all people. Mm-hmm. Man, what an involved life, for one thing. And it must have been really cool for Manning Marable to get into all of this.
Sure. And that subtitle of A Life of Reinvention, that kind of hits it all, that he's constantly reinventing himself, right? Malcolm X is constantly adopting a new persona, a new way of engaging with the world, a new way of trying to deal with this question of his second-class status in America, right?
Yeah.
He's trying, the different strategies he adopts are reflected in the different personas that he takes on over his life, whether that is as a hustler in his early years, as he says in his autobiography, or whether it's as a militant preacher in the Nation of Islam in the late 50s, to whether by the end of his life, of course, as Marable states, embracing Orthodox Islam, and certainly not abandoning his black nationalist views, but rather adding depth and complexity to our understanding of him.
Yeah, that was during my formative years in my teens, and I was in the middle of a lot of things, and that story of Malcolm X and all that was going on at the time, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, his Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad, the black community, the black power movement, James Brown, Sid Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, all of those things blended together in what we were doing in the gradual awakening of my generation of guys, black guys, as what would I say, as men, to throw off that yoke of fear and of oppression that we actually did feel because of the way the society was at the time. And these guys, as much as I was very much opposed to the Nation of Islam and what they were doing, because I was a Southern Baptist at the same time, here was Malcolm X and these guys, man, and they're like standing up, being heard. And Muhammad Ali gets all involved in it. Even before he changed his name, he was a hero because he defied the Jim Crow. He defied you're not going to hang me. You're not going to lynch me. I'm beautiful. You know,
right,
this guy.
Right, right.
It was, that's a very exciting thing for me.
And so the way that you put it is the way that I think a lot of historians try to consider Malcolm X. And I think you put it so beautifully in that, you know, most Malcolm X was so influential on African-American life and African-American politics and African-American culture. Most people weren't in the Nation of Islam, right? Most African-Americans were not part of the Nation of Islam. Most people weren't direct adherents of Malcolm X. You could be a Southern Baptist. You could admire Dr. King. You could be an integrationist in the larger sense of the word and still be very much taken by the ideas of Malcolm X, right? Because what it, or if we just want to think about some of the core values that he instilled that have had such a lasting legacy into our culture, it's taking pride in yourself as a black person, right? Taking pride in your culture and your history. Adopting the right, your rights as a man, right? Whether that's through self-defense or whether that is through the rights to free speech and to use your education as a means of power, right? These are all ways in which the ideas of Malcolm X filtered into the mainstream, right? You didn't have to be an adherent of the Nation of Islam to embrace those ideas, obviously.
Right. If you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Professor Aram Gadzouzian, who is the director of the Malcolm of the Marcus W. Orr Center for the Humanities here on campus, and he is also the director of the Hooks International Book Award Lecture, which is coming up on March the 19th. It's on a Tuesday. Reception at 5:30 p.m. The lecture will be at 6 p.m. It's going to be in the University of Memphis University Center Theater at 145, in the theater, rather. Is that 145? Room 145, I think.
Okay. It is the University Center Theater, the big theater. Yeah.
The big theater, yeah.
Which I believe is room 145, yes.
And the honoree for the Hooks Institute National Book Award Lecture is Manning Marable. And the book is Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. And Manning Marable, his interesting story himself, who had just passed away just before the book was published.
Literally days before the book was published. This book was his last great accomplishment in a lot of ways. And he had been working on it and working on it. As I mentioned before, that it was about 10 years in the making. And you always heard these stories. Oh, Manning Marable's writing this biography of Malcolm X. It'll be out any day now. I remember that throughout my grad school and early years as a professor. And it would always get pushed back a little more because you're always working on it more, working on it more. Right up until the end. In fact, it was on Amazon.com and they kept pushing back the publication date on it because he was just, you know, with the last stages. Exactly. Yeah. And he was also dealing with a debilitating disease. He knew that he had a life-threatening disease throughout the last years he was writing the book and that it physically incapacitated him at times. And that was, of course, slowing down the book as well.
Yeah.
So it's a very tragic story that he died. I mean, he saw the physical book because, you know, there are advanced copies of the book, but days before it was released in the bookstore, he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. He was a professor at Columbia University.
A longstanding professor at Columbia University. He was the founder of their African American Studies program, led it for a long time. He's was the author of something like 16 books, including a few that are particularly influential for African-American history, for scholars of African-American history. He was one of the sort of the lead figures in this new generation of African-Americans who were historians, who were entering into sort of established channels of academia. Because for a long time, you know, African-American historians were sort of operated outside of that because they were just someone like W.E.B. Du Bois, for instance, who was a great historian in an earlier period. Other white historians weren't reading W.E.B. Du Bois. But by Marable's era, and he's having an influence on how historians, white and black, are thinking about this experience.
Wow, that's cool. And from a historical perspective, well, I always want to say it, but as a history professor, as a history teacher, how do you see his influence, this book, Marable's influence helping the book on Malcolm X?
Well, I think that what he brings to it is this depth of understanding, right? He was a person of your generation in terms of the way that Malcolm X affected him as a youngster,
about the same age.
And he and of course was immersed in sort of this political world of New York City in the early 70s. Marable was an activist as much as he was a historian in his earlier years. So there are elements of this radicalism that shaped a lot of his early thinking. So Malcolm X was sort of, I think, always he was part of, he was one of these children of Malcolm X, as we often call that generation of African Americans, particularly men. So that has shaped his, what he, I think what he brought to the project. But then he also brought to it this incredible discipline as a historian, and the incredible skills that he had as a historian. So what we have here is, in a lot of ways, just such a perfect biography in the sense of its balance in terms of telling the story of a life, but also illustrating the times around it, the culture that, that Malcolm X existed in, the political resistance that he faced, the surveillance that he was under. You know, any good biography does both of those things. It tells the story of a person, but also the story of a time. Yeah. And this book does that exceptionally well.
Has it been academically accepted?
Very much so. I think in the academic mainstream, it has been widely celebrated. You know, won the Pulitzer Prize for biography. It has won a number of other awards. Now, it's a book that is in some ways, in African American circles, actually has been more controversial than it's been in the wider realm. There are members of the Nation of Islam who take issue with the book. There are others from various black radical channels who take objection to the way that either the way an individual person is characterized, or with some of the larger assumptions in the book. In fact, there was a whole book of essays that was a response to Malcolm X, to Marable's biography, that was critical of it. And they, this book was called A Lie of Reinvention as opposed to A Life of Reinvention. And I think more generally part of the issue has been that Malcolm X has become this myth, right? That we all revere Malcolm X, and particularly African Americans, of course, revere Malcolm X. He's become this, I don't know, this figure up on the, on sort of the African American Mount Rushmore, if you will, right? alongside Dr. King. So when Marable renders him as this more complex human being and sort of, tries to poke holes in some of this just sort of accepted mythology of Malcolm X, that was hard for a lot of people because they, you know, they had a sense of him as just this, I don't know, pure, you know, someone who didn't exist in the human realm in a lot of ways. That he was, but of course, a good biographer's job is to explain the person as a human being, right?
There was a line in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, when the newspaper reporter found out the whole story, and he said, and he got up to walk away, and Jimmy Stewart said, "You're not going to write the story." He said, "When the myth becomes true, print the myth."
Right. And for a long time, and you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X, not, there's a lot of truth in there, but there's also some myth, right? As a historian, it was Marable's job to try to sift through that myth and try to tell as accurate a story as possible. Now, I think for most readers, you leave the book with a greater appreciation of Malcolm X than you would otherwise, because now you see him as a human being, like me, like you, like everyone else walking the streets of Memphis. He has his flaws, he has his strengths, and we also, you know, it forces us to recognize that there's like a nice, neat little story we like to tell about Malcolm X, right? That he was a black nationalist and he hated whites, and then he went to Mecca and it totally changed his thinking, and he came back embracing all people. Well, he's a black nationalist to his dying day. He is shaped by his trip to Mecca, and it does shape his vision of Islam and his vision of what the, and his criticism of the Nation of Islam. But it's important to note that on that same trip, he's touring through Africa. He's going to Ghana. Later, he goes to Egypt. He tours other nations in Africa, and that's shaping his vision of black nationalism. His black nationalist ideas are getting stronger. That ultimately, it's African Americans who must control their own destiny.
Yeah.
And he has a model for that in what's going on with these new independent nations in Africa, because this is three, at four, time, 5 years after these nations have become independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after Britain backed out, as it were. Tom Collins used to kill me. He said the colonialism put all those nations back at least 50, 100 years, because the development that the Europeans had during the Hundred Years' Wars and all those wars, when they finally gelled their nations together, the African nations were occupied by the Brits, by the Germans, by the French, by the Europeans, and they didn't get a chance to do all of that. So now all the murder and brutality and things that are going on are just them forming, which they would have done back 200 years ago had they not been colonized.
Right, and if we think about it from that historical perspective, for that generation of African Americans, for Malcolm X's generation, the independence of these newly this new independence of the African nations, starting with Ghana in 1957, and especially in 1960 when so many African nations declare independence from European colonies, that's shaping their thinking too, right? That's what's going on across the Atlantic Ocean is having a direct influence on the minds of black people here in the United States.
And you know, and that was those guys, a lot of those guys, like my dad, a generation of guys who had come back from that war and thought, okay, now I've gone over here and I've fought and I'm you know, taking a chance of dying, and I come back here and I can't be a man, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you want to think about going across the other ocean, right, you want to think about the Pacific Ocean in Vietnam, you know, that's another way in which people are coming with an international perspective. You know, why did I go fight in that war? Is, you know, a lot of people are thinking, is there, you know, a larger way in which dark-skinned people of the world are being forced to fight wars for the United States? And, you know, there's a whole international perspective that is really shaping a lot of African-Americans in this time.
Wow. Once again, if you just tuned in, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Dr. Aramza Gadzouzian. I always get stumbled with your name a third or fourth time.
It.
But it's a good one.
It's
good to say it. It works in vocal cords. But now coming to do this, to speak and accept the award, is a gentleman by the name of Zahir Ali.
Yeah, and Zahir Ali was the lead researcher for Manning Marable in the process of writing this book. Zahir Ali is a graduate student at Columbia University. And of course, Marable was a professor there. Ali worked directly under Manning Marable, so he worked as a research assistant on this book. But he's become sort of a spokesman for the book in a lot of ways. One of the projects that he's been in charge of is actually an interesting thing on the Columbia University's website. Is they created an annotated version of the autobiography of Malcolm X. So, along, you know, so there's the full text of the autobiography.
Right.
But with that, on the other side, you know, right next to it are just sort of historical context. It's telling you when something is, you know, a little bit different from actually what happened. It has different sort of historical analyses as it's going along. It's a really interesting project that they did. Mm-hmm. So they didn't just write this book. They created a whole sort of scholarly center around it in a lot of ways. Different digital projects that Ali's been a part of. And he's become this particularly powerful spokesman for the book and its legacy. He's been on CNN, C-SPAN, MSNBC, CBS, Al Jazeera Network. He's been all over the media. He's toured for the book and been a sort of a champion of the book. Yeah. And because of his close relationship with Dr. Marable, he's been sort of able to carry it on. So he's coming, because of Dr. Marable's unfortunate passing, he is accepting the Hooks Institute's National Book Award on behalf of Dr. Marable.
Dr. Manning. And then will this be awarded to Dr. Manning or to his department in Columbia? Well, this is going to
the award is to him, himself, because he's the author of the book. I don't know who will actually accept it back in New York. But Ali will be the one who will speak on his behalf and accept it on his behalf.
Now, Ali has done his own share of moving around as well, an alumnus of Harvard and Melvin Mays. He's a Melvin Mays scholar. He's pretty, I would imagine he could write his own book.
Well, in fact, he is writing his dissertation, which will certainly be a book, on a related topic. He's writing a history of Harlem Mosque No. 7, which was the mosque where Malcolm X was in the late 1950s, the one that sort of elevated him into fame. And he's doing this as sort of a history of the mosque, of the Nation of Islam mosque, but also the you know, what it reflects about Harlem and that time. And Ali is an expert on not just sort of African-American politics, but also religion and culture. And he's taught courses, for instance, on Islam in the United States and Islam and African-Americans. So he brings that interesting perspective to his work as well.
Yeah. Which has always been a very touchy topic in a lot of circles, because this, especially around here in this area in the South, because of the Bible Belt, you know, people are Protestants. You know, it's even unusual to have Black Catholics around here. You know, we do have some, but we do have several places, several churches. And my uncle, at the time of all of this going on. And the Nation of Islam was not looked on favorably by most Black people, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And but the food was good, the fish. And there was a larger presence here in Memphis, and I just wonder about that too. Now that we're talking about it, and maybe I should look around for it. I don't notice much of a presence of the Nation of Islam anymore in Memphis, and I wonder if their presence is as large as it was throughout the country anymore. I think maybe Malcolm X had something to do with breaking that down.
I think Malcolm X certainly brought a notoriety to the Nation of Islam and a surge in numbers in the late 50s and early 60s. I mean, in Memphis, I believe we have a Nation of Islam mosque. I believe it's on Vance, close to downtown. But I don't know. In terms of numbers, I'm not sure. Now, one of my old colleagues was actually doing a project on Muslims in Memphis, and it would have been interesting to see some of that data. I'm not sure exactly where that went, but as you suggest, right, especially in the South among African Americans, there's sort of a stronger hold of Protestant Christianity here,
yeah.
And that has limited the appeal of the Nation of Islam to many, but not to all, right? I mean, right. And now yeah. One trend that we've seen since the 70s as well is African Americans who are converting to Orthodox versions of Islam, as opposed to the Nation of Islam, which has its own cosmology, its own doctrine. That is in some ways connected to traditional Islam, but in other ways is very divergent from it.
Yeah, a whole separate situation. Mm-hmm. And that surprised me when I thought, you know, Islam was Islam.
Right, right. So obviously Islam has its own different paths, just as Christianity does, just as any major world religion does. Mm-hmm. But the Nation of Islam is a particularly interesting story in just how unique it is from other versions of Islam.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And its role in shaping the early civil rights movement too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Once again, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Aram Gadzouzian. It is about the Hooks Institute National Book Award lecture in honor of the late Manning Marable's Malcolm X: A Life of Reinvention. It's Tuesday, March 19th. With a reception at 5:30 p.m. and the lecture at 6 p.m. The admission is free. It's open to the public. And it will be in the University Center Ballroom.
It'll be in the University Center Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for more information, you can look it up at the Benjamin L. Hooks Institute for Social Change here at the University of Memphis. And I'll give you all that information. As a matter of fact, we're going to be running hot tips and PSAs about it as we go along, too. But you can look it up at the Benjamin L. Hooks Institute of Social Change here on the campus of the University of Memphis, on the website at memphis.edu.
If you don't mind, can I just say a word about the great committee
that I did this with.
This is a committee of six professors. I mentioned a little bit earlier, six professors from the University of Memphis and from other institutions. So Wanda Rushing, who's in our sociology department, a wonderful scholar and a sociologist who's focused much of her work here in Memphis. Ladrika Menson-Furr, who runs our African and African American Studies program. She's in the English department. Daniel Keel, who is a law professor and also a member of our local school committee. And then Charles McKinney, who's a professor of African American history at Rhodes College. And finally, Femi Ajanaku, who is a professor of sociology at Lemoyne-Owen. So what we've tried to do is to try to get people from different perspectives, from different academic perspectives and different departments, but also different institutions, to try to give us a wide way of thinking about all the different books that get submitted for consideration for this award. There were about 30 books that were nominated in this year when we selected Malcolm X's Life of Reinvention by Manning Marable, mm-hmm. And we're getting books from you name the press, major university presses, major trade presses. This is a book award that now has a real national profile.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so it's brought a lot of national attention to what's going on here in Memphis in the world of books and in the world of history. And this is an award where the criteria is a couple things. The book award's stated condition is that it's going to, quote, best further the understanding of the American civil rights movement and its legacy. So that's what we look for in terms of who wins the book award. So we look for quality in terms of the scholarship, originality in terms of the scholarship, but we also look for books that we think are going to speak to an audience not just of academicians, right? Not just people in the university, but that can address the conditions that are important to all human beings, that are important to anyone interested in politics, culture, history, and particularly the civil rights movement.
Right on. Well, that is so cool that it is elevated, that you guys have elevated this program so fast.
And a lot of it is really due to Daphne McFerrin and her great leadership of the program.
Daphne. Yeah. She's a good girl. Not girl, woman. Heavy, heavy woman. Sorry, Daphne. But once again, it is going to be March the 19th. That's on a Tuesday. The reception at 5:30 p.m. The lecture at 6 p.m. It's in the University Center Theater. It's the Hooks Institute National Book Award lecture in honor of the late Manning Marable's Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. And the lecture will be presented by Zahir Ali, American History and Religion and Politics professor. And this is going to be exciting. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Right on. Aram Gadzouzian. Again. I got it.
You did.
Thanks so much, man, for being a guest.
Thanks
today.
For having me, Mel.
All right.
Appreciate it.
And this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.